Me, how he works with folks, how he worked with Joshua, and he works with us too, and does kind of neat things. And Jeannie caught something that was kind of wonderful and unique, how God communicated to us some of these strategies that we're learning. And why don't you share that, if you would?
Jen was talking about how obedient the children of Israel had to be. She said they just needed to say yes to God. And the manifestations at the very end, I wrote down a quote, "All you need to do is say yes." And that's what God said this morning. And, you know, he is with us and directing our steps. And it is. Those are a long time ago, yet today we still live in the same obedience, the same promised land, and all we have to do is say yes to God. And he told us that, so yeah. Praise the Lord.
Absolutely. Well, right now we're going to go and look at two different battles. Well, one is not a battle, but the first battle after Jericho is against a city called Ai. That's why the English pronunciation is Ai. It's probably in Hebrew more like I or something like that, but we'll just call it Ai. So we have to turn to Joshua chapter 7. The ait that Ai is talking about is greed and lust. And we're going to see why. Verse 1 of chapter 7.
But the people of Israel broke faith in regard to the devoted things. For Achan, the son of Carmi, son of Zabdi, son of Zerah, of the tribe of Judah, took some of the devoted things. And the anger of the Lord burned against the people of Israel.
Uh-oh. What was the devoted things? Do you remember? The silver, the gold, everything that was of the spoil of Jericho was devoted to God. And that's what this guy, Achan, had taken. Let's go ahead and read verse 2 through 5.
Joshua sent men from Jericho to Ai, which is near Beth-Aven, east of Bethel, and said to them, "Go up and spy out the land." And the men went up and spied out Ai. And they returned to Joshua and said to him, Do not have all the people go up, but let about 2,000 or 3,000 men go up and attack Ai. Do not make the whole people toil up there, for they are few. So about 3,000 men went up there from the people, and they fled before the men of Ai. And the men of Ai killed about 36 of their men and chased them before the gate as far as Shebarim, and struck them at the descent. And the hearts of the people melted and became as water.
So they lost this they lost this battle. They were defeated. And 36 men of the Israelite army got killed. That was terrible. After their flush of victory at Jericho, and then, you know, here's this very relatively small city compared to Jericho, and they lost the battle. And so it says that their hearts melted and became as water. So we have to just take a minute here and figure out what it is that they did wrong and what was the problem. This guy named Achan had taken of the spoils, right? And what he had done was he hid it inside of his tent and buried it in there. So from that, we know that his whole family was in on the plot. And later on, his whole family is killed because of this. And you see, it's easy to think that that's relatively harsh, that he would get an extreme punishment and his whole family too. But what he did was he broke the principle of first fruits, where the first fruits belong to God. And even though it was only one guy out of the whole camp of Israel that did this, that one guy affected the whole community. That's a really important thing to notice, because any time that any of us withhold from giving the first fruits to God, it affects the whole community. And, you know, we tend to, I just want to make a comment here. We tend to use that verse, 2 Corinthians 9:7. If you want to look at it, you can. But it's basically, as a man purposeth in his heart, so let him give. And we say, well, you know, tithing and giving and all that stuff is in the Old Testament. And so what it says in the New is that I can just purpose in my heart and give whatever I want to, and that's what God will bless. But that's not true, because what that phrase is about purposing in your heart, the emphasis should be on the heart part. Not the purpose part, but the heart part. What God looks at is our heart. And what He wants to have from our heart is He wants to have an acknowledgement that everything we own, everything we have, all of our abundance, all of our job, our prosperity in any form or fashion belongs to God. And giving of the first fruit of it is just a small token of giving back to God what already belongs to Him. Mm-hmm. It's an acknowledgement in our hearts that it is God who is going to supply the victory in every category. And I wanted to read a section to you from 1 Chronicles 29. You can look at it if you like. This is when David was taking the offering to build the temple, and people had given very willingly. It says in verse 9, then the people rejoiced because they had given willingly, for with a whole heart, remember I said heart, right? They had offered freely to the Lord. David the king also rejoiced greatly. Therefore, David blessed the Lord in the presence of all the assembly, and David said, blessed are you, O Lord, the God of Israel, our Father, forever and ever. Yours, O Lord, is the greatness and the power and the glory and the victory and the majesty. We're talking about strategies for victory here, right? Mm-hmm. For all that is in the heavens and in the earth is yours. All of it. Yours is the kingdom, O Lord, and you are exalted as head above all. Both riches and honor come from you, and you rule over all. In your hand are power and might, and in your hand it is to make great and to give strength to all. And now we thank you, our God, and praise your glorious name. Mm-hmm. What happens when there's a free will giving and an acknowledgement of how God is the one who is supplying everything, including that victory at Jericho, right? And every other victory that they're ever going to get is going to come from Him. That's what that guy broke the principle of. See? He took it first. If this guy, Achan, had only waited till the end of the battle of Ai, God said they could take as much spoil as they wanted. He only stole a couple bars of silver and some gold and a robe. And it was worth maybe about $25,000 in our terms. So, you know, it was not a little amount, but it was not a great amount either. Because that next time, when the very first city that they got to take the spoil of, he would have gotten hundreds of thousands of dollars. See? He jumped the gun and said, I'm going to do it my way. And really refused to acknowledge that God was the source of all of his supply. So, what also happens in verse 2 through 5 there that Bob had just read is that in the flush of the victory, Joshua forgot to ask God what to do. And he listens to his men, because his men come back from looking at this puny little city, Ai. And they say, oh, it's no problem. I mean, look, we won the Battle of Jericho. And we're like, uh-oh, wait. it was not we that won the Battle of Jericho. It was God who won the Battle of Jericho. That's why the spoils belonged to him. That's why the glory should have gone to him. That's why they should have come to him and said, okay, well, now what? And this particular ite of greed and lust is very, very deceiving, because you think that you are right. You think that you have your own way of working it all out is just the best, you know? And so you just don't even bother to ask God. Ooh, they got in trouble. They got 36 of their men killed because they did not ask God. So here's what happens now. Verse 6. Then Joshua tore his clothes and fell to the earth on his face before the ark of the Lord. Bob, why don't you go ahead and read 6 through 9.
Before the ark of the Lord until the evening, he and the elders of Israel, and they put dust on their heads. And Joshua said, "Alas, O Lord God, why have you brought this people over the Jordan at all, to give us into the hands of the Amorites, to destroy us? Would that we have been content to dwell beyond the Jordan. O Lord, what can I say when Israel has turned their backs before their enemies? For the Canaanites and all the inhabitants of the land will hear of it and will surround us and cut off our name from the earth. And what will you do for your great name?"
So even Joshua here, after all that he has seen so far, right, he says, well, we should have just stayed on the other side of the Jordan. Like those Eastsiders, remember I was talking about? Joshua is saying that because he was so freaked out about losing this battle. He said the Canaanites are going to laugh at us. They're going to just overwhelm us. And what do we do? What do we do? So he's on his face. He is repenting. And he is sorry about it. But he's also like groaning and moaning and saying, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. Right? Isn't that a typical thing that we do? I don't know why this is happening to me. Well, first of all, start looking as, are you giving first fruits? Second thing is, are you acknowledging that God is the source of every single thing in your life? I'll tell you a story. When I wrote that giving book, that was after a year of really going to the Word and just asking God, say, look, God, I've been faithfully tithing for 10 years here. How come I don't see the promises come to pass? And I wanted to know the answer to that question, because I believed with all my heart that the Word was true, and that when God said, my God shall supply all your need, that meant all, right? But I didn't see it in my own life. And what I learned through that process of studying the Word through that particular year was that it was my heart that was wrong. I really did not trust that God would take care of me. It wasn't about my being faithful to do the giving, nothing about that, you know, but it had to do with just my heart. I still was trying to figure it out myself. And when I finally laid that all down, it just like totally changed my life. And there was a process of growing in that too, where, you know, the trust built over a period of time. But that's what each one of us can have, where we can see God's favor, His victory, His abundance, and how He really wants us to be in the land of milk and honey. That means have everything that we need. And if we trust Him and if we rely upon Him, He will come through with that. So, verse 10, now God says to Joshua,
"The Lord said to Joshua, get up. Why have you fallen on your face? Israel has sinned. They have transgressed my covenant that I commanded them. They have taken some of the devoted things. They have stolen and lied and put them among their own belongings."
I love that. Because here, Joshua, you could think, oh, well, you know, he was being very repentant, right? He was repenting. He was down on his face. He'd thrown ashes on his head. He was, you know, he was really sorry that that happened. But he didn't ask God what happened or why did it happen. He was just sorry about it. See? And God says, get up off of your face. Just start asking me. I'll tell you what the problem is. Hey, there is somebody in this camp who took of the first fruits of the devoted things. That's the reason. Woohoo, okay. You know, but it woke Joshua up. See? Where he went, oh, okay, I'm done. We need to have confession of sins. There's no question about that. But once you confess the sins, then it says that God is faithful and just to forgive our sin, right? You get back up and go, now what? Now what do I do? Because they still had this city standing in front of them, Ai, right? So what's really interesting is that God tells them that who this guy is and what he had done and how he had taken the devoted things and where he had hid it, right? I mean, God tells Joshua everything about it. So don't you think he's going to tell you if there's a problem in your life about what to do about it and what's going on? Is God a piker? Is he, you know, withhold that kind of thing? No. If we ask him. You have not because you ask not, right? That's what it says in James. And, all right, so go down to verse 19. This guy named Achan is the one who is taken, and he gets confronted. So this is what he says.
Then Joshua said to Achan, my son, give glory to the Lord God of Israel, and give praise to him, and tell me now what you have done. Do not hide it from me. And Achan answered Joshua, truly I have sinned against the Lord God of Israel, and this is what I did. When I saw the spoils of a beautiful cloak from Shinar and 200 shekels of silver and a bar of gold weighing 50 shekels, then I coveted them and took them. And see, they are hidden in the earth inside my tent with the silver underneath.
The three things you need to see there is I saw, I coveted, and I took. That's what happened to him. That's the pattern of greed, is I saw, I coveted, in other words, I desired it, and I took it. I, right? Not God, 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 but I. I saw, I coveted, I took it. That's what happened to Achan. So now let's look at verse 25. They end up punishing him.
And Joshua said, why did you bring trouble on us? The Lord brings trouble on you today. And all Israel stoned him with stones. They burned them with fire and stoned them with stones. And they raised over him a great heap of stones that remain to this day. Then the Lord turned from his burning anger. Therefore, to this day, the name of that place is called the Valley of Achor.
The word Achor means trouble. So basically what Joshua says, why are you achoring us? Your name is Achan, but you really are an Achor. You're a trouble. You're a troublemaker. You've brought this whole trouble on us. So why are you achoring us? And like I said, remember, taking of the first fruits affected the whole community. But now we're going to go into chapter 8. So God doesn't leave him hanging there and expecting that Joshua is going to beat himself, do a mea culpa thing, right? I blew it. That forever, right? No. He's going to tell him what to do about this defeat. And so let's read 1 to 3, yeah.
And the Lord said to Joshua, do not fear and do not be dismayed. Take all the fighting men with you and arise. Go up to Ai. See, I have given into your hand the king of Ai and his people, his city, and his land. And you shall do to Ai and its kings as you did to Jericho and its king. Only its spoils and its livestock you shall take as plunder for yourselves. Lay an ambush against the city behind it. So Joshua and all the fighting men arose to go up to Ai, and Joshua chose 30,000 mighty men of valor and sent them out by night.
So the answer that God told him of how to fight this battle at Ai was to take 30,000 fighting men. The city, the entire city of Ai, only had 12,000 people in it completely. And those, that included the women and the children, right? That's why the report had been earlier of the men, oh, you just need 3,000, they'll be able to take that, no problem, right? Well, because of this thing that happened where they had found a sin and had to deal with it and everything, in order to get back up, sometimes it takes much more impetus and energy and focus in order to overcome the defeat. So that's why God told him, take 30,000 men, and I'm going to tell you what to do. I'm going to read from this book. It's called Joshua, Mighty Warrior and Man of Faith. If you want to learn more about Joshua, it's by the same man who wrote the book on the sheep, about Psalm 23, the shepherd, Philip Keller. And this is what he says. He says, though Ai had only about 12,000 armed men to guard her defenses, Joshua was clearly instructed to take all of Israel's fighting men of 30,000 into action. Thus, the overwhelming odds against the enemy were about, 30,000 to 12, right? 3-1. It was a bit like the old adage of using a sledgehammer to swat a fly. I love that. Second, the strategy to be used was one of deceit and subversion. Instead of an outright frontal assault, Ai was to be taken by ambush. It was a military maneuver that would be carried out under the cover of darkness. None of these tactics were the sort normally employed by forces with enormous military superiority. They were, instead, the cunning and craftiness used when a force was heavily outnumbered. So it was, again, sort of an illogical way to deal with this small city. But what we need to see from this is that whereas greed and lust sometimes seems to us a small city, it's a small ite, no problem, we could take this, it really takes a heavily armed force in ambush to get rid of it. And let's see, let's go and look at verse 13 to 18. It describes the battle. And then we're going to see this on this really cool map.
So they stationed the forces, the main encampment that was north of the city and its rear guard west of the city. But Joshua spent the night in the valley. And as soon as the king of Ai saw this, he and all his people, the men of the city, hurried and went out early to the appointed place toward Arabah to meet Israel in battle. But he did not know that there was an ambush against him behind the city. And Joshua and all Israel pretended to be beaten before them and fled in the direction of the wilderness. So all the people who were in the city were called together to pursue them. And as they pursued Joshua, they were drawn away from the city. Not a man was left in Ai or Bethel who did not go out after Israel. They left the city open and pursued Israel. Then the Lord said to Joshua, stretch out the javelin that is in your hand toward Ai, for I will give it into your hand. And Joshua stretched out the javelin that was in his hand toward the city.
That's a great picture, huh? About how holding up the sword. All right, we can do it now. I want to show you up on the map here. See, this is kind of a relief map picture of Ai. And I want to show you it right here, too. Hang on a second. I went too far. Okay. Here's the map of where Ai is. You can see Jericho right here. See? There's Jericho. Here's where the camp is, Gilgal. Okay, so it's not really that far. However, all of this area right here is mountainous. Okay? Where Ai is, it starts to be going into the mountains. So these ridges and everything up on here, this is where Joshua's men were. He had about 5,000 men right there, and that's what they could see from the city. But he sent a big portion of the army right here and over here, which is on the way to Bethel, and also behind this ridge right here. So they could not see them. When the men of Ai came out and they saw Joshua up here, they said, oh, well, it's the same situation as it was before. We'll just all go out of the city and we'll go fight them. So the men from Ai went up to fight Joshua here. Meantime, he sent the signal up and he said, okay, go. And they went behind and took over the city and burned the whole city. All these two armies right here. And then that one joined in too. So the men from Ai are fighting Joshua right here, right? And they look back and their whole city is burning. Uh-oh, we blew it, right? So anyway, it's just a really neat thing about the ambush, how they ambushed the city right here. So this little city. And then right after that battle, they went up to Bethel and took over that city too, because both of those cities had joined together. So that's how Joshua and the children of Israel overcame this small city, right? They dealt with their sins. That's really important. And they got back up, and then they set up an ambush where it was, again, not a logical thing. One of the things I learned about giving is that when something happens and there's something that goes wrong, that's a time to give where your right hand doesn't know what your left hand is doing. In other words, to give something unusual, give it in a different place, or give where someone doesn't really know, like an anonymous kind of a thing. Because what it does is it just reinforces that God is your supply. And it breaks that authority of the whatever evil is going on that's attempting to latch onto your life. So there's a lot of really neat things. Some of them are in that book back there, and you can read it. Let's read verse 25 here.
And all who fell that day, both men and women, were 12,000, all the people of Ai. But Joshua did not draw back his hand with which he stretched out the javelin until he had devoted all the inhabitants of Ai to destruction. Only the livestock and the spoil of that city Israel took as their plunder, according to the word of the Lord, and he commanded Joshua. That he commanded Joshua. So Joshua burned Ai and made it forever a heap of ruins as it is to this day.
Yeah, they have big arguments in the archaeological world about where Ai is. It got so destroyed that they can't find it anymore. But they actually have, you know, started looking in this area where topographically it fits the way the description of the battle is. And so, you know, eventually they may end up finding where Ai is. But they're going to find on the top layer a big pile of rubble again. I love that. I just think that is so great. Oh, my goodness. Now, see, Achan, if he'd had just waited, he could have had all the spoil of the city of Ai. It was pretty interesting here where it says, all who fell that day, both men and women, were 12,000, all the people of Ai. Because in the book that I read, you know, he was saying that the fighting men were 12,000. But it was really all the whole people of Ai was only 12,000 people. So they took 30,000 fighting men to go against a city of 12,000. You see the, how it works, though? The strategy, the plan of action, is that when there is defeat, it takes a lot more impetus to get over it. And but the still all the same points as what we've already covered, be obedient, be meek, listen to God, ask God what you should do. What else? You know, you could go down the line, see? Be quiet, praise, work together. Now we get to first fruits giving, deal with sin, ambush the little city. And the very next thing that they did was they, in verse 30.
At that time, Joshua built an altar to the Lord, the God of Israel, on Mount Ebal, just as Moses, the servant of the Lord, had commanded the people of Israel, as it is written in the book of the law of Moses, an altar of uncut stones upon which no man has welded an iron tool, and they offered it to burnt offerings, they offered on it burnt offerings to the Lord and sacrificed peace offerings. And there in the presence of the people of Israel, he wrote on the stones a copy of the law of Moses, which he had written.
So what they did was, here you can see it actually back on this map, Mount Gerizim is pretty far. It's about, you know, half a day's journey. So they didn't get all happy about their victory at Ai and get prideful about it like they had kind of done with Jericho. Wow, we did it. It's really great. Here we go. Let's just go. Joshua said, no, we're not going to do that. The first thing that we're going to do after this victory is we're going to go and we're going to hear the word and put it in our hearts. So they travel up to this area of Shechem, and between these two mountains, they put part of the children of Israel on this side and part on this side, and then Joshua built this altar of uncut stones like this, and they sacrificed on it, and then they wrote he wrote the words of the law in the stone, and they read the law to the people that whole day so that it would reinforce to them that the victory was from God. And that as long as they stayed faithful to the word and to what God said, then he would still fight the battles for them. So there's a lot of really neat things. Bob's going to share a little incident, you know, of something that goes along these lines, because we have to ask God what to do. And I'm sure you could think of an incident too of times where you didn't ask God and went ahead. But go ahead, share.
Yeah, I'll share an incident that occurred when we were in England. And I thought of this because when Jan asked me to share about an incident along these lines, I was with Allison, and I had shared about a situation when we were WOW ambassadors. And we had a big meeting the next day up in Liverpool, and we were in Bristol. And that night before, we were out and about, and the car broke down. We had a station wagon, and there were five adults and three kids. And so we had to get it fixed. We had the big trip all the way up to Liverpool. I mean, that's 4 or 5 hours away. So they have, instead of AAA, they have AA. And that's, what is that, Automobile Association? And then there's the Royal Automobile Club. And so what we did, we were members of AA. Or I think the fellow I worked with called them for us. And so these guys came out and tried to fix the car. And, of course, I thought, well, this is the natural thing to do. You know, let's get some experts in there. I don't know anything about automobile mechanics. So the guy couldn't fix it. So he called another team of guys to come out, and they came out. We had 3 or 4 teams that covered all of Bristol, and they could not fix the car. So they towed us to our house. And the next morning, of course, we had to go. We had to leave, and we were stuck. So the next morning, it was God put it on my heart, crawl underneath the car. So I got underneath the car and looking up, and I saw this little rubber tubing connected to some other metal tubings. And it was the gas line, and it had a tear in this little rubber tubing. So I pulled that off. I was able to cut away the bad part, and there was enough slack that I could connect them. So did that, got up, started the car, worked perfect, and off we went to Liverpool. So if I would have asked God in the beginning and crawled underneath the car, we would have saved hours of headaches and all these other guys, experts, trying to fix it. So thankful God covered that one for us.
That's a good one, huh? Like I said, can you think of some other times where that's happened to you? I can, too, where we just, you know, both ways, like when you obeyed God and it worked out perfectly, and then other times where you didn't do it right and went, oh, yeah, that's right, I forgot, I was supposed to ask him, right? let's read the end of chapter 8 here about how they were standing on Mount Ebal, verse 33.
And all Israel sojourned as well as native born with their elders and officers and their judges, stood on the opposite sides of the ark before the Levitical priest who carried the ark of the covenant of the Lord, half of them in front of Mount Gerizim and half of them in front of Mount Ebal. Just as Moses, the servant of the Lord, had commanded at the first to bless the people of Israel. And afterward he read all the words of the law, the blessing and the curse, according to all that is written in the book of the law. There was not a word of all that Moses commanded that Joshua did not read before all the assembly of Israel, and the women and the little ones, and the sojourners who lived among them.
That reminds me of Psalm 119, Thy word have I hid in my heart that I might not sin against thee. Right? I was reading that psalm this morning. I encourage you to go read that whole section in there because it's all about putting the word in your heart. And if you do that, then it's there. It's like it resonates in there. And that's when God can give that little nudge to you, like, remember? Hey, go to him. Ask, you know. But if we don't have the word really cemented in our hearts, then that's when it's so easy to get deceived by those ites, like greed and whatever else there is. The next city that we're going to talk about is Gibeon, and they really did actually get deceived. Joshua got deceived again. So let's go ahead and start in chapter 9. And in verse 1, what happened to our picture? Uh-oh. Maybe I stopped it somehow, huh?
It's not on here.
The picture, the light's not on, huh? Oh, well, we'll figure it out at lunchtime. We'll just go ahead and read this part, not worry about the slide. There was just only one slide. Because the Gibeonites is the record that we're going to talk about here. And chapter 9, verse 1 and 2. Go ahead and read that.
As soon as all the kings who were beyond the Jordan, in the hill country and in the lowland all along the coast of the great sea toward Lebanon, the Hittites and the Amorites, the Canaanites and the Perizzites, and Hivites and the Jebusites heard of this. They gathered together as one to fight against Joshua and Israel.
Okay, so the first thing that Joshua chapter 9 starts telling us about is that when all these ites heard that they had won the victory at Jericho and they'd won the victory at Ai, they started gathering together. Because remember, I told you they were all about how each king was a god, and they would very rarely have a coalition with each other. They just wanted to rule their little territory. And that's why also later on you hear, you got the name Baal, you got Baal Berith, Baal Fedge, Baal this, Baal that. Every city had their own Baal. See, it was the same idea. But the kings who were beyond the Jordan in the hill country, they decide, we're not going to win unless we band together. So they start gathering themselves together to fight against Joshua. So let's go ahead and read verse 3 through 8.
But when the inhabitants of Gibeon heard that Joshua had done to Jericho and to Ai, they on their part acted with cunning and went and made ready provisions and took worn out sacks for their donkeys and wineskins worn out and torn and mended, with worn out patched sandals on their feet and worn out clothes, and all their provisions were dry and crumbly. And they went to Joshua in the camp of Gilgal and said to him and to the men of Israel, we have come from a distant country, so now make a covenant with us. But the men of Israel said to the Hivites, perhaps you live among us. Then how can we make a covenant with you? Then said to Joshua, we are your servants. And Joshua said to them, who are you and where do you come from?
See, where they really came from was right here. Here's Gilgal, here's Jericho, here's Ai. And these four cities right here that are in yellow are Gibeon and right there. They were royal cities that belonged to Gibeon. They were a coalition that belonged to this king of Gibeon, right? And so he totally makes it look like they're coming from a far country, right? They get crumbly bread and moldy bread and everything, wearing worn out clothes, like, oh, we came from such a far distance and we finally made it. Oh, will you please just, you know, take us in? And even Joshua says to him, saying, who are you? Where do you come from? But maybe you do live among us. That should have been the indication right there. He already has a doubt, right? But he doesn't follow it through and does not ask God. Oops. Here we go again. So let's see here. They tell him that we're coming from a far country. Let's go ahead and just read 9 through 13 too.
They said to him, from a very distant country your servants have come, because of the name of the Lord your God. For we have heard a report of him and all that he did in Egypt, and all that he did to the two kings of the Amorites who were beyond the Jordan, to Sihon, the king of Heshbon, and to Og, king of Bashan, who lived in Ashtaroth. So our elders and all the inhabitants of our country said to us, take provisions in your hand for the journey and go to meet them and say to them, we are your servants. Come now, make a covenant with us. Here is our bread. It was still warm when we took it from our houses as our food from the journey on the day we set out to come to you. But now, behold, it is dry and crumbly. These wineskins were new when we filled them, and beyond they have burst. And these garments and sandals of ours are worn out from the very long journey.
Now, verse 14 is the key verse here.
So the men took some of their provisions, but did not ask counsel from the Lord.
Oh, dear.
And Joshua made peace with them and made a covenant with them to let them live, and the leaders of the congregation swore to them. At the end of 3 days, after they had made a covenant with them, they heard that they were their neighbors and that they lived among them.
Hmm. So it didn't take them long to find out that they really were their neighbors and that they had been deceived. So what happens then after that is that Joshua honors the covenant that he made with Gibeon. They are the only nation of all of the Canaanites who were allowed to live, because Joshua had promised that he would not take care of, he would not hurt them. And that's also just a, you know, a side note. It's really interesting why Joshua did that, was because a man's word and their word was more important to them than anything else. And because they had given their word that they would not kill them, they stood behind the word, their word. Now, it was not that they did not have to deal with the consequences of this deception, because the very first thing that we're going to see happens after lunch is that the Gibeonites get attacked. And so then they call on Joshua, hey, come and help us. So Joshua ends up having to honor this covenant and fighting for the Gibeonites. But this is what he did do. So verse 26.
So he did this to them and delivered them out of the hand of the people of Israel, and they did not kill them.
Yeah, because Israel wanted to just, let's just wipe them out. They're just Canaanites. It's no big deal, right? And Joshua said, no, we are going to honor our covenant. But this is what he did do.
But Joshua made them that day cutters of wood and drawers of water for the congregation and for the altar of the Lord to this day in the place that he should choose.
So what he did do was he made the Gibeonites be servants. And they were servants in the temple for the rest of the time, even through the time of David, Solomon, on. You read about the Gibeonites, that they were the ones who chopped the wood and hauled the water in the temple. So when there's a record in there where they ask the Gibeonites, why did you do this? Said, well, because we knew that if we didn't do something, that we were going to get killed, and it would be better to be a servant and to be beholden than to be completely wiped out. So that's why they did it. They didn't actually really believe, but isn't it ironic that God said, okay, they deceived you, but now you're going to have to make them work in the temple. So every day they're going to have to see the sacrifices, see what God is all about, understand that God is a God of mercy, and that he let them live only because of his mercy. That's pretty wild, huh? So you have the it of deception, and, you know, it's very, very easy to walk by our five senses. And none of us are exempt from getting sucked into that once in a while, even in the best case. 2 Corinthians 5:7 says, you know, we walk by faith and not by sight, right? But our little eyes just seem to like, okay, you know. And before we know it, we already went down that path, you know. But the coolest part of the strategy in this one is that it's that you repent of the sin, but you deal with the consequences. You just hit them straight on and say, okay, God, all right, I blew it. I didn't walk by the Spirit here. But tell me what to do, and then he'll tell you, this is what you do. And he'll enable you to deal with the ongoing situation that you will have to deal with because of walking by your senses. But see, isn't that awesome? God, no matter what, in all of these strategies, it's the reason that I got so excited about Joshua and seeing this stuff is it's so real. It's so practical. It's what God wanted us to learn. He could have picked any other battles, but he picked these because there's lessons in it, you know? There's encouragement in it. Like, you think Joshua is really great? Well, let me tell you what happened to Joshua. He's just like us. He listened to his men. He listened to other people around him. He got deceived by his five senses. Yet, God turned it around and enabled him to have victory after victory. And I think that is just not only for all of us, you know, but for leaders especially, to be encouraged and to say, you know, you're a leader not because you're perfect and because you do everything right. It's because you did say yes and yes and yes and yes and yes, and you be faithful and obedient to listen to God and to desire to help his people and to lead them into the promised land. That's what a leader does, even in our day and time. It's someone who is encouraging. And it's not necessarily someone, but you see, it's not necessarily someone who is perfect. And the really most wonderful, wonderful part about Joshua is that he learned from his mistakes, because there is no other time now after this where it says that he walked by his senses. That's a pretty incredible testimony to him, that he got up, you know, he got up, he dealt with things, and then he learned from it, like, okay, I'm not doing this again. I am going to ask God every single step of the way. So after lunch, then, we're going to see a little bit more about the last two campaigns, where they get to win all the northern part and all the southern part of the land of Canaan. And I think you'll be really blessed to see some of those ites that we're going to deal with there too. But I wanted to stop, since we have just a little bit of time before we can go to lunch, and just stop and see if you have any questions or comments. That's AI and Gibeon. So, bless you. Does anybody have anything they want to ask or comment on? Oh. Yeah. Well, then those who go in the promised land is number four. Who are willing to go in the promised land and fight the ites. They're willing to fight the ites. Do you like that part about the ites? There's probably a lot of other ites that you could make comparisons with. In fact, you know, what we're not doing today is we're not telling the whole story about how Moses brought them up, you know, from Sinai through into the land, and they battled with the Amalekites and the Moabites and the Ammonites before they even got to the Jordan. They had dealt with those three ites. So I like the Amalekites to me represent all the attacks that the devil sends and against people that are unprovoked, like you didn't deserve it, but you got attacked anyway. The Amalekites represent that, because they were always attacking the children of Israel for no cause. And when they're coming out from Sinai up into the land of Canaan, they get attacked by them again, by the Amalekites. And so God tells them how to deal with that too. Yes. Oh, they did it right away. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because the reason why they had to have the Jordan, the water come back, is because it was springtime and it was flooding, and they normally wouldn't have been able to cross over the Jordan in the spring. There we go. Right. Yep.
Another interesting thing that you and I talked about is on verse 12, it talks about the manna seeds.
Right.
Being fed by manna all that time up until that chapter. And then the day after, so.
Yeah, they were being fed by the manna all the way up until they crossed over the Jordan and had that Passover. And that's when the manna ceased. Yeah, it is. It's really neat to see how God provided for them continually through everything, all the way. Yes, Vic.
Mm-hmm. and it really does affect one another. I just thought that was incredible to see that in this, in the light of the Old Testament too.
Mm-hmm. We do really affect each other, but that also, you know, where sin affects each other, but also victories affect each other. When we see victories, it just surges the believing and the joining together where we go, okay, we saw that victory, so God can do this. And so the more we work on these principles to just really focus on what God's deliverance is, the more testimonies there'll be, the more deliverance we'll be able to shout about and to say, and that helps the whole community start rising up to say, okay, well, God did that for Katie, He can do that for me. That kind of thing. And it works both ways, where there's an effect both ways. Because when they saw the victory at Ai, then they were very encouraged again, right? So it took away all of the defeat part of it, and now the focus was on victory. Yeah, Jeffrey.
What you were saying earlier about trusting God, even though you had been doing your giving and everything, and we saw in this record today how they didn't always go to God and get the answer, and then they would get in trouble. Steve, when he was here, was teaching about one of the things he said was that the devil, Lucifer, when he rebelled against God, thought he could do it on his own without God. And one of our biggest problems is when we try to do things on our own without God. And to me, it's like this all ties together. This is a really big deal in our lives, and we're going to really walk victoriously in this day and age. We have to ask God every step of the way, and we have to trust Him every step of the way. And what you were talking about, trust leading to prosperity. Trust is not only the key to prosperity, trusting God, but it's the key to every aspect of our lives.
Yeah, that's right. Yep. Yes, George.
You mentioned when you repent of your sins, you still have to deal with the consequences. I see that as a pattern in what we've seen so far. And I think the pattern of that has been set.
Yes.
My definition of forgiveness is that we are taken back to where the problem is, and we're starting. We forget about what's gone on in the past, and we start over from where we are. This, I think, includes facing the consequences. Am I right in saying that? That's something that you need to do with every situation like that?
I think
when we, as we mentioned, I think the pattern has been set in these chapters so far, that facing the consequences, how am I going to do that?
That's right.
Am I right?
I believe so. I can't think of a situation where there would be a sin that you wouldn't have to face the consequences.
Somebody's going to have to face them. The consequences are there.
Right. We just have a tendency to think, oh, well, God washes away my sin, and so that's it. It's over. But, you know, it's not quite that simple. Especially when we refuse to deal with the consequences. And not that God can't change the consequences, like He changed it from a defeat to a victory, right? But to not face them or to shove them under the rug and go, oh, that doesn't matter. That's what's wrong. See? Yeah.
I can't face these consequences. I gotta go to God and help them.
That's right. Yeah.
But I think also when we go to God and we express our forgiveness to God where we have made mistakes or errors and thank Him for His forgiveness, then He can deliver us from those consequences.
Right.
Because Jesus Christ delivered us from sin and the consequences of sin.
Right. Yes.
So, but He can deliver us from the consequences.
Yeah, Jeannie.
I think it requires a meekness too in your heart that, okay, now I didn't ask God, and that's the reason why I probably sinned or didn't do what I should have done. Now I'm humbling myself and saying, okay, now work with me, help me get through it. Just like they needed 30,000 men to take over the city, they really didn't.
Right.
God had to work with them to prove to them again, okay, listen to me.
Mm-hmm.
And every day, Jesus was meek, and the good thing about him is he never did make this mistake. But
He's the true Joshua. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That was another point I noticed in here, is that we see all these things happening, the physical consequences and the physical resolutions of these things. But there's also a bigger resolution, and that is the spiritual.
That's right.
So we read into these like spiritual things in there. That's where we do our learning.
Right. And that's why, seeing the application into the New Testament is what really makes Joshua come alive here. Because you could read it, and many people have, oh, that's such a nice story, yay, he won the victory, but not even see the application, because it's the same today. A lot of things, spiritually we have more, like I was explaining, we all are Joshuas. We can walk like Joshua did. So it's not limited to like God only talking to him, but there are so many really wonderful principles, and I'm sure I haven't even seen all of them, because every time I read it, I see something else. I think, oh, I should have put that on this sheet. Anyway, oh my goodness. Anybody else? Yes.
I think sometimes when we're reading the Old Testament, it's easy to read it and think, my goodness, that action by God was somewhat extreme. And I think we need to realize that you might read something in the Word, like, for example, when those people stole those the jewels and what have you. It wasn't a great deal of money, like you said, but it was it was what motivated them to do that, and what was behind that. And like you mentioned about the child who was born through incest, a son could have sex with his mother, how incredibly extreme that is. And yet, if you had to look deeper into what got that person to do that in any of the things in the Old Testament. And I think if you really think of it like that, you see why the actions of God were so necessary. It's almost like what God tells us about in the Word is just the tip of the iceberg.
Right.
And, obviously the absolute bottom of the iceberg is the fact that they just stop loving God. They've turned away from God. And that's why the first great commandment is to love God.
Well, and that's why Ephesians 6 says we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers. And a lot of these ites that I'm talking about today are the powers. They're the ones who orchestrate all sorts of things to get people to do stuff. And, God tells us that we have authority over all of the principalities and powers. But it appears that we're wrestling against people. See, and that's always the same thing, the same spiritual battle as it's describing in Ephesians 6, is don't look at the senses. It's not a person that we're fighting against. This is a spiritual battle. And the God of this world wants to control everybody. And he will use whatever it is that he can to get even believers to, stay in the world, murmur and complain, stay on the east side or whatever. Just not to deal with them. See, not to hit it head on and say, the principalities and powers have no authority. They don't, but they act like it, you know, and they think they do. So they really are the ites, and they're what's defeated. And we're going to see some more after lunch about how they get defeated. So would you like to go ahead and take a break? And there's lots of different places in the neighborhood. There's a couple sandwich shops right down on Rosecrans. And